similarly interviewing new arrivals. He asked questions rapidly, interested only in my answers, ignoring me. Name, serial number, rifle number, etc. All the dry detail that tells nothing of a man. What'd you do in civilian life? Newspaper, sports writer. Okay, First Marines. Go out front and tell the sergeant. That was how the Marines classified us. The questions were perfunctory. The answers were ignored. Schoolboy, farmer, scientist of the future. All were grist to the reception mill, and all came forth neatly labeled First Marines. There were no aptitude tests, no job analyses. In the 1st Marine Division, the presumption was that a man had enlisted to fight. No one troubled about civilian competence. It may have been an affront to those vestiges of civilian self-esteem which Paris Island had not had time to destroy. But New River soon would take care of that. Here, the only talent was that of the foot soldier, the only tool the handgun. Here, the cultivated, the oblique, the delicate soon perished, like gardenias in the desert. I felt the power of that attitude, and I felt, for the first time in my life, an utter submission to authority as I emerged from the lighted hut and mumbled First Marines to a cluster of sergeants standing there expectantly. One of them pointed with his flashlight to a group of men. I took my place among them. About a half dozen other groups were being formed in the same way. Then, at a command, I swung up on a truck with my new comrades. The driver started the motor, and we rolled off, bumping over pitted, muddy roads, past row upon row of silent, darkened huts, rolling, ever rolling, until suddenly we stopped with a lurch and were home. Home was H Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment. Home was a company of machine guns and heavy mortars. Someone in that cheerless hut had decided that I should be a machine gunner. The process of enrollment in H Company hardly differed from the method of our assignment the night before, except that we were run through a hut occupied by Captain High Hips. He fixed us with his gloriously militant glass eye. He fingered his military mustache, and he questioned us in his clipped British manner of speech. Then, with an air of skepticism, he assigned us to our squad huts and into the keeping of the NCOs now arriving from other regiments. These men came from the 5th and the 7th, the veteran line units in whose ranks were almost all of the 1st Division's trained troops. My regiment, the 1st, had been disbanded, but now, after Pearl Harbor, it was being reactivated. The 1st needed NCOs, and many of those who came to us betrayed by a certain nervousness of voice a newness of rank. Their chevrons were shiny. A few had not found time to sew them onto their sleeves. They were pinned on. A few weeks before, these corporals and PFCs had been privates. Some predated us as Marines by that margin only. But in such an urgent time, experience, however slight, is preferred to none at all. The table of organization had to be filled. So, up they went. But the 1st also received a vital leavening of veteran NCOs. They would teach us. They would train us. They would turn us into fighting troops. From them we would learn our weapons. From them we would take our character and temper. They were the old breed. And we were the new, the volunteer youths who had come from the comfort of home to the hardship of war. For the next 3 years, all of these would be my comrades, the men of the 1st Marine Division.
Audible hopes that you've enjoyed this presentation. Be sure to check out the rest of Helmet for My Pillow by Robert Leckie.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Audible.com and Tantor Media are pleased to present this free first chapter from Helmet for My Pillow by Robert Leckie.
Helmet for My Pillow, From Paris Island to the Pacific, by Robert Leckie. Narrated by John Allen Nelson. Copyright 1957 by Robert Hugh Leckie. This unabridged audiobook